Dinhart Show on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, and I'm your host this morning. And with me in the studio is Kevin Chapman, my producer for the day, and thank you, Kevin. We're here live every Saturday morning from 9 to 10, and our show deals with all matters of the mind and heart, including mental health, stress, life transitions, parenting, spirituality, and much more. Please join us by visiting our Facebook page, Mind and Heart Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. Or you can send us a tweet at MindHeartWPVC, or email us at MindHeartWPVC@gmail.com. The phone number in the studio is 434-284-9470, and you can call us here in the studio with your questions and comments. And we welcome all opinions and points of view. The only ground rule is that we maintain civility during any discussion. I'm very pleased this morning to have in the studio as my guest, Reverend Don Lansky, who is the co-pastor at Unity Charlottesville. And we'll be talking this morning about a number of issues having to do with spirituality and religion and related questions. If you are not able to listen to the full show this morning, you can always replay the show on starting on Monday of this coming week at sevillepodcast.com. That's one word, sevillepodcast.com. And just when you get to that site, just put in the search box Mind Heart and our shows will come up and you can listen to the interview this morning with Don. So I want to welcome you, Don, and thank you so much for getting up this morning and joining us on the show. Looking forward to an interesting discussion this morning.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So let's begin, if you would, by just telling me a little bit, telling our listeners, rather, a little bit about how this journey, this path to becoming a Unity minister and sort of how that evolved in your life. I think that we'd be interested in knowing a little bit about the background.
It's been a very long, circuitous path. I've been a preschool teacher. I've been a stockbroker. I've imported Oriental furniture. I worked with juvenile offenders in Florida in the judicial system. I eventually landed in business in the cruise industry, actually, in Miami. And but during that time, I've taught transcendental meditation for 10 years. So wow. I became a teacher of transcendental meditation. So I've always kind of had since I was 18, that kind of inner sense of yearning and spirituality. And eventually it led me into wanting to attend the Unity Seminary and becoming a Unity minister.
Gosh, what an interesting and varied background. So had you been a member of a Unity congregation and that sort of given you a flavor of Unity and the tenets of Unity that led you in that direction as opposed to a different denomination?
Yeah, actually, when I was in Florida teaching transcendental meditation, around the corner there was a Unity Center. And I remember the first time I ever went, Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, was there speaking about the mystical experience he had when he was looking back on the Earth on his trip to the Moon.
Wow.
And and later on, the very famous yogi came to that center, and I thought, wow, what is this place? That's pretty cool. So, and what I realized as I started attending, this was back in 1983, I think, part of their regular program in Unity Centers is a time of meditation and silence.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which really appealed to me. So,
yes. As a meditator, I'm sure.
Yeah. So that got me interested, and then I started attending.
Yeah. You come from a different religious background than Unity. I know many of us, and you're probably close to my age, grew up in a time of real change and upheaval, spiritually and politically and socially. But what was your upbringing in terms of your own, any belief system growing up?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a Jewish family, actually, and I was bar mitzvahed.
You were, okay.
Yeah. And, this is during the 60s, so I trained my parents well. They when I went off and found Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and studied transcendental meditation, they became well-trained to in different approaches to life.
Was your family observant? Did you observe the High Holy Days?
Observed the High Holy Days, okay. But that was about it.
Not regular weekly synagogue or temple. Okay. Yeah. And there is a mystical tradition in Judaism. Is that something that you were exposed to growing up, the Kabbalah?
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. I really... You know, it really wasn't until I attended seminary that I learned about Judaism.
Interesting.
And I found it, you know, fascinating.
Yeah.
So, and it's kind of interesting. I wonder if I would have become a rabbi. had I known.
Yeah. It's just such a rich tradition, mm-hmm. with such a deep spiritual grounding. It's one I've always felt, growing up a Protestant Christian, always felt an affinity, mm-hmm. to, in terms of, we had friends when we lived in New Jersey and would always invite us for the holidays, and it was just, it's very, very attractive to, mm-hmm. me in terms of the spiritual, yeah. dimension. So why the unity? You alluded to it a little bit in terms of starting to attend around the corner, but at some point you must have felt a stronger call to go to seminary.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's a sense of that I found going to Unity that I was home. You know, that there was that what they were saying and what they were teaching, and Unity is not a dogmatic or a creedal.
It's not. Okay.
No, it's not. It's actually was founded in 1889 as an educational movement, not a religion.
Oh.
So, but I found that the things that I was hearing in these centers just resonated with what I felt to be true for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was the kind of the main interest there at the beginning.
And then how did you find your way? I mean, was there a period of time where you attended Unity and then found your way to seminary? I mean, what was sort of the timeline?
I was working. We had a very, very exciting and active business in the cruise industry. We started with two people, and I wound up over a period of years with 100 people.
Golly.
It was a very large cruise travel agency that we sort of invented discount cruising.
Really?
And so we were kind of guerrilla marketers. And, but, you know, I've always had this deep spiritual yearning. So I would actually, the Unity church that was near our, was very near our office, and I would run out during my lunch hours and take classes.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I think there was always an interest there.
Interesting.
In learning, and there was quite a bit of actually learning. You had to, at that time, you had to have 160 or 200 credit hours before you could even apply for seminary. So I was doing that during my lunch hours.
Golly. And then made the decision to attend. And is it in the Midwest? Is the seminary in the Midwest?
Yeah, the seminary is outside of Kansas City.
Okay.
And that's where the Fillmores, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, who are the co-founders, a couple who co-founded Unity, that's where they were based and centered.
And how long was that program, the seminary program?
At that time, it was 2 years. Now it's three.
Three, okay. And it was full-time. I mean, you had to live there and be in residence, go to class every day.
Yep.
And share with us, if you would, a little bit about the curriculum. I mean, because, again, I'm interested in sort of the foundations of Unity.
Well, the curriculum, you know, the founders of Unity, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, were Jesus Christ people. They love Jesus Christ. And Unity is culturally a Christian or denomination.
So they loved him as a really learned teacher or as a Messiah?
As a teacher.
Okay.
And that was kind of a thought stream. It was really an interesting thought stream in the late 1800s. There were a lot of different offshoots of that thought stream, Christian Science and Divine Science and Religious Science and all of these different things. The idea primarily was that Jesus was an enlightened master, essentially. That was their basic idea.
Yeah, yeah. Now that really has some appeal to me. I resonated with your comment about sort of that spiritual hunger. I often say about my own path that I wandered in the spiritual wilderness for many years, mm-hmm. until in the late teens, early 20s, found my way to meditation and then to Buddhism. But it's interesting that... that was some of your path as well, that yearning and not finding it elsewhere until you stumbled upon this path.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, for me, my connection with Jesus actually came in a very long meditation retreat that I was on, and from a deep, very deep meditation,
interesting.
Which got me interested.
Yeah, I had sort of rejected the church, and then my father being a minister, and then when I came back around and began to appreciate the teachings of Jesus without needing to think of him as Son of God or the Messiah. Mm-hmm. I was amazed with how profound those teachings were or are. Yeah. I think sometimes they get lost in the shuffle of dogma these days. Certainly on the fundamentalist side of Christianity, but you know, and I think so often it's not an original thought that he was really speaking metaphorically, and some people tend to take what he said literally. But I think if it's taken metaphorically, is that sort of been your sense of?
Well, this is basically, you asked what we learned in seminary. Yeah. Basically, what the Fillmore's interpretation of the Bible was, that the Bible is a record of human consciousness. And not to be taken literally, but metaphorically and metaphysically, actually.
Oh,
so
fascinating!
That the Bible is a series of metaphysical teachings, and the way that you relate to the Bible as a current, relevant part of your life is to look at a particular passage and really go deep into what it means to you. So you don't need to rely on some clergy person to tell you this is what this means.
It sounds very similar to what we call, in my tradition, Dharma contemplation, mm-hmm. where we sit with a teaching of the Buddha and just, it doesn't lend itself to easy description, but contemplate it, let it sort of sink in, and then begin to sort of resonate deeply. Yeah. Is that?
It's very similar, and there's certainly a tradition in the Christian Church, in the early Church, of Lectio Divina, which just has that same kind of approach.
Yeah.
So how we got to a place where Bible is used as a weapon to convert, to propagate hatred and all that.
It
does boggle the mind.
I often say, gosh, if Jesus were here today, he'd be very unhappy with the state of his movement.
Mm. Yeah. And also, it's also interesting in the Unity movement. The Fillmores initially did not want, kind of like John Wesleyan Methodism, they didn't want churches at all, but they actually started having weekly meetings after a Sunday service. They would invite people from all different denominations to come and just speak and share with each other what they learned that day in their particular denominations. And they would study truth, basically, together. That's what they did. Only after, I think it was 1906, after pressure to have their own thing, that they began ordaining ministers.
It's remarkable to think of them with such foresight in over 100 years ago. I mean, it's remarkable people, I'm thinking. I don't know anything about them, but...
Yeah, there were a lot. That must have been an amazing time to be alive. You know, the Unity is heavily influenced by the Transcendentalists, by Emerson, who...
Right.
And, the Fillmore thought stream came. They were actually... there was a student of Mary Baker Eddy who founded Christian Science. Emma Curtis Hopkins. They were students of Emma Curtis Hopkins. So they were essentially Christian Science ministers, basically, and then just kind of started their own thing because they just wanted to be independent thinkers.
And subscribe to the Christian Science notion of healing through prayer. I mean, was that part of their tradition?
They weren't. They certainly believed in the power of healing, and Unity began as a healing ministry. Myrtle Fillmore had a healing crisis. She was diagnosed with tuberculosis, which was terminal at that time.
Yeah.
And through her own prayer work and meditation work, she healed herself of tuberculosis. And that's how Unity officially started. It was basically healing. So they had a healing and prayer ministry. And that continues. That tradition, there's a Silent Unity, is a 24/7 prayer line, 800 prayer line, that people can call from, and it's interdenominational. People can just call any time, day or night.
And hear recorded
They talk to a live person who will pray with them.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's free, and it's been going on for 120 years.
And I assume folks in your congregation avail themselves of that. I mean, it sounds like a wonderful resource.
Anybody can do it.
Parenthetically, or sort of brief digression, at some point, the church here went from being the Unity Church to being Unity of Charlottesville, mm-hmm. and I was just curious about that switch and what drove that.
Yeah, it is a cultural shift away from the idea of church and the kind of the emotional overload that is for a lot of people. We know
myself included.
And we know in this there was some research a couple of years ago. I don't remember the names of the authors, but there was a term that they coined called cultural creatives, and these are people who consider themselves to be spiritual but not religious. There are 68 million and probably more now in this country alone.
Yeah,
and
present company included.
Yeah, and so I think that was kind of the a way for us to say that, well, Unity has is culturally Christian, has certainly has this tradition and roots, but it's really universally inclusive because we welcome people of all faiths, creeds, religions, sexual orientation.
Golly, that's really inclusive and wonderful to hear.
Yeah. And because it's non-dogmatic, you know, we don't have we certainly have a point of view. We have teachings, but
right.
But what people believe is up to them. We encourage freedom and free thought and discovery and all that.
And I want to get into that a little more in depth later in the hour. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show. I am your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll have a check of the weather, and we'll get back to our discussion with Don Lansky.
You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. The Mind and Heart Show is heard every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The number in the studio is 434-817-9470.
And we're back. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show with Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning. A quick check of the weather, and before we get back to our discussion, right now in Charlottesville, it's 43 degrees and partly cloudy. We're looking at a high today of 50. A low overnight was 31. It looks like it's going to be not too much sunshine today, but certainly another mild day in terms of temperature for this time of the year. So get outside and enjoy the weather. My guest this morning is Reverend Don Lansky, who is the co-pastor at Unity Charlottesville. And we're talking about matters of spirituality versus religion and the Unity tradition and related questions. So if you want to join the conversation, please post a question on our Facebook page at Mind and Heart Show, or send us a tweet at MindHeartWPVC, or you can email us at MindHeartWPVC@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call us here in the studio at 434-284-9470. So, Don, your wife, Patricia, is your co-minister. She's also an ordained Unity minister. Is that the correct term, minister?
We're called ministers.
Okay. Did you all know each other, met at seminary? What was the...
No, we actually... Patricia was a psychotherapist in private practice for about 25 years in Miami.
In Florida, okay.
Yeah, and we actually met in a Bible class, and we think our minister set us up, because there was one day in that class... we were there, and he didn't show up. So we started talking.
And were you at seminary at the same time? Did you go together?
We went together. Yeah. I was in the class ahead of her.
Okay. Yeah. And was your first stop after graduation here with this Unity community, or was it somewhere else before Charlottesville?
No, it was here. This was our first.
Golly.
Our first.
And it's worked out well.
It has. We love it.
Your community's really grown.
Yeah.
You've got a beautiful facility out on Hydraulic Road. Mm-hmm. Is that correct, Hydraulic?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's been quite a remarkable story about the Unity congregation here.
Yeah, they were in rented space. Unity actually has been in Charlottesville since 1978. So we were in rented space for about 28 years before we moved into our own facility.
Boy, that must have been a wonderful transformation of the community.
It was a great day.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, congratulations. You know, you often hear couples that work together, it presents some challenges. I mean, if you find that being co-pastors is been an easy path?
Yeah, I think it's been remarkable. We met at our Unity Center in Miami and began working together there, and it's been very natural. It's a very creative and fulfilling position and relationship. Yeah.
And it's just a wonderful model for members of the community to see this couple who also are there. Their co-pastors modeling, you know, a really working relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a nice benefit, it seems to me, to the folks that belong to your community.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it has a lot of meaning for us, because it's you know, we have equal status.
Yeah,
you know, it's a couple in ministry, a couple in together working together. We feel like we're a stand for equality of male and female, and we have the, you know, the male and female energy, and
yes.
It's been a lot of, we love marrying couples because it's,
oh golly, I can,
you know,
imagine
it's, that's a
Yeah.
Nice for a married couple to be married by a married couple.
Yeah, very special. Yeah. Yeah. So you referenced earlier that unity sort of comes out of a culturally Christian background, and I wanted to get a sense of just how Christian, in a traditional sense, unity is. If you could speak to that.
Well, first of all, since it's non-dogmatic, we allow for what anyone wants to believe about Jesus to be there. Some people can come and believe that Jesus is Messiah and Lord and Savior. That's not an issue at all. So people can believe whatever they want to believe about Jesus. That's their business to believe about what their relationship is. So, and we have in our congregation, we have Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus and all sorts of things in our congregation. So it's not, that's not really an issue. But you asked about the Christianity part of it. So basically, it's a shift of attention, essentially. You know, instead of heavily studying the Dhammapada, for example, we just happen to look at the Bible. And for me personally, I find many of the things that are taught to be exactly the same.
Agree.
But that's kind of just generally an orientation, and we do actually look at all sacred scripture. We're not in unity. We can reference anything we want to and look at anything we want to. So
yeah,
there's truth in all of that. If we consider as a central idea that Jesus is an enlightened teacher, a way shower, an elder brother, the idea is that the same Christ that is in Jesus is in you and I. So we each have the potential. We define Christ as a state of consciousness, actually.
Okay.
And which would be very similar, I think, to what you might say is the Buddha nature or the Atman or the soul or whatever. So it's we don't like to get hung up in semantics about it, but the idea of the Christ and the Christed consciousness, it, to us, is what Jesus was talking about.
Right.
And the idea, for me, the most central idea, there are many, but one of the most important for me is that all the things that I do, you can do, and more. And that part of it, that and more part of it, is, I think, something that a lot of the traditional mainstream Christian religions sort of miss.
Yes.
So that you could actually be and have and do the things that Jesus did and more, which is an amazing idea, very,
yeah,
very hopeful.
It is very
inspiring.
Hopeful. And you've probably just answered this question, but it was really had to do with how unity sees other faith traditions. It sounds like in a very welcoming and inclusive way. Would that be fair to
absolutely.
Say?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
We honor the truth in all religions and all spiritual paths, and really recognize that there are many paths to either what you call God or source energy or an enlightenment or higher consciousness, whatever you want to call it. I find personally the semantics just absolutely get in the way continually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care
if well
someone
made.
Calls himself an atheist or an agnostic. I mean, I've been an atheist. I've been an agnostic. To me, it's just all the same.
You know, often I get this question, and sometimes have this question of myself, is the distinction between religion and spirituality. Is that something you could shed some light on for us this morning?
Yeah, sure. And I loved your, we had talked a little bit about your analogy. Would you mind saying what that is about that?
Yeah. This is not from me. I borrowed this. I can't remember the source, but someone said, and this is a quote, "Religion is a person sitting in church thinking about kayaking. Spirituality is a person sitting in a kayak thinking about God."
I think that's brilliant.
You're welcome to borrow it, because it's not mine.
And I love that idea, and I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. I think religious people can be deeply spiritual and have been throughout the ages and still are. And I think the first answer to that is that people who say that they're spiritual but not religious are just people who've had a bad experience in church,
yes,
or in synagogue or whatever. They just don't want anything to do with organized religion. And I understand that, and my answer to that is that unity is not that organized. So, you know, okay, welcome.
Come on in,
you
know? Yes.
But the idea of spirituality, I think, is just that is just a sense that is deeply ingrained in us. I think we're wired for this deep yearning and for higher connection with whatever, higher power, self, God, whatever we want to call it, doesn't matter. But there's just this deep yearning and drive for wholeness.
Yes, yeah. You know, it strikes me some that, speaking of any of the traditions, in Buddhism there's a heavy emphasis on the alleviation of suffering in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in my experience, the path really makes good on that promise. And I see people in a range of other faiths, not to pick on one, who consider themselves deeply religious. And I know some of these people, but their suffering is so deep. And I want to say, you know, there is another way. But it seems as though they get caught up in the religion and the dogma and the scripture and the creed.
Yeah.
And don't really derive much personal freedom or personal tranquility or equanimity. Just curious in terms of your thoughts or experience.
Yeah,
with that
I think
question.
That's true, and I think a part of that is part of the reason that that movements like Unity don't have the mega churches of 30,000 people is that this is really a path of personal and individual responsibility. You have to take responsibility for your actions. And we don't teach that the devil made you do anything, that the devil even exists, actually. We teach that you create your own reality through your thoughts and through your words. And this is, I know, very much a Buddhist thought stream as well. The Buddha is one of the first passages from the Buddha was that you create your reality through your thinking. So
yes.
That's a very, very strong thought in Unity.
Yeah. What's the sort of socioeconomic, if there is a typical Unity person? I mean, is there concern with racial diversity within Unity, or is Unity fairly racially or gender or sexually diverse?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the center and the location. We've been ordaining gay and lesbian ministers for decades, and we have diversity statements and all of that stuff, and our center, we would love to see more diversity in our center. It just is kind of what it is. So, but there's certainly an openness to inclusivity and
We've really struggled in our community with greater racial diversity. I mean, mm-hmm. you come into the room and it's mostly mm-hmm. middle-aged or older white folks, and we haven't figured out the secret to being able to attract people of different backgrounds, and it's one of the real regrets I have about our community.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think in Unity the one commonality that we have is that I think we're all religious refugees. I think I counted two people that actually grew up in Unity. Everyone else is from some other path, some other denomination.
You know, I've not heard that term, but when you said it, it really resonated, because that's probably true of 99.5% of our community too. I mean, people from any number, everything from having grown up in atheist homes to fundamentalist mm-hmm. Christian to Jewish to Hindu to whatever. Yeah. So it's I'm going to steal that term from you. And so do you consider the group here a religious community, a spiritual community, both? A community. I mean, what's the sort?
Yeah, I think we refer to ourselves as a spiritual community.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that is most highly prized is freedom. Freedom to discover your own path, your own truth, and so that is certainly a spiritual thing. And we are individuals who come together. We are, I would say, at least like-minded souls, and that we all have a sense of just wanting to be our best selves. So that is the binding. That is the binding aspect of our community.
Mm-hmm. And I assume either you or Patricia on Sunday morning give a talk, a sermon, whatever its title. And is that scripturally based in terms of the Bible or the Dhammapada or the Pali Canon or whatever? I mean, is there?
Yeah, no, it's not necessarily scripturally based.
Okay.
We refer usually to some sacred scripture, whether it's Buddhist scripture or Christian, or the Bible. So we try to base it with some scriptural reference in at least somewhere along the line, but there's no liturgy. There's nothing that we have to do or have to speak about or whatever. We try to speak about what's on people's minds, and we try to, really, I think what we do best is frame questions, because it just seems to us that the quality of answers that you receive in life really are largely dependent on the quality of your question.
Yeah, that's
so. We ask a lot of good questions, and we ask people to really go deep and think about these things. And we always have a time of meditation.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, at least 10 minutes. Sometimes.
So there's silent meditation.
Sometimes silent. Sometimes guided. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
Sometimes I imagine it would look like Vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
And
is the community itself and community building, I mean, is that considered a real foundational aspect of Unity, coming together as a like-minded community?
It's important. I would say it's important. We don't have a desire to convert anybody or change anybody. That's not part of it at all, or save anybody. We think that community is very, very important. We want to encourage, always encourage. You know, this is, I know your dad was a minister as well, and I think one of the things we learn in seminary is that the role of a minister is to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted, right? So I think we're always having to push a little bit for people to want to do more outreach, want to do more inreach, all of that stuff.
Yeah. And I guess children are an important part of the Unity community here and elsewhere.
Yeah. Actually, Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, had the very first children's publication in America.
Golly.
Back in the early 1900s, called We Wisdom. It was around for 30 or 40 years before they kind of put other things in front of it. But the children are very important, and the idea of drawing out from what is within the child rather than trying to put something into them was her big thought.
Yeah.
So we love you. We have a great youth education program.
It sounds like they were very anti-dogma in their approach.
Yep.
I have a friend in California who's been involved with an organization for many, many years, of which I know literally nothing, called Science of the Mind. Is that also in that same tradition in the late 19th century?
It's the same thought stream. Ernest Holmes founded Science of Mind,
okay.
and it's now called, it was called Religious Science, and now it's called Centers for Spiritual Living, but a very very similar thought stream. The idea that each one of us has a spark of divine potential within us, and that we create our thinking through our realities through our thinking. All of that are very, very common.
I had a conversation with her once, and we were essentially talking about the same thing with slightly different words and descriptions, but it was amazing how this truth is really universal once you get out of the dogma business and into talking about what really matters. This is tremendous. There's a quote down at Yogaville. It's, I think, paths are many, truth is one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Satchidananda, a quote from him, that when I visited there once and saw that, it really made tremendous amount of sense.
Yeah, that's certainly one of our main adages and one of our main thoughts as well.
Yeah. So is there a typical, what's the stereotypical Unity member? Is there such a thing?
I can't say that there's a stereotypical member. I think that they're, if I could say anything, it would just be that they're freedom loving. They do not want to be told what to do. And I know the motto of my ministerial class was, "We don't need no stinking rules." That was so. I think that's kind of a fairly typical. People are very independent and just really don't want to be told what to do.
Yeah,
they really don't.
And back to your seminary experience, brought a question to mind. Was there was it basically studying the different faith traditions, or was it all, was there sort of a body of Unity? I don't even know what to call it. Information that was also taught.
Yeah, I think it was probably. I don't know about the curriculum at other seminaries. We studied Bible. We studied pastoral care and pastoral counseling.
Okay.
We studied some meditation techniques. We studied. There is a fairly large body of Unity literature. I mean, Unity has been around since 1906 as a movement. So there's quite a lot of literature that really deals with these different aspects of prayer, meditation, positive thinking, positive affirmation, and the nature of God, the nature of reality. There's a lot of literature about that, so we study that as well.
Yeah, and within your congregation, your community here, are there study groups that might want to emphasize this teaching or that teaching or this tradition? I mean, is there opportunity at Unity to say, come together and study the Dhammapada or some other more specialized point of view?
Yeah, there has been from time to time. It really is dependent on whether we have teachers available or someone with passion who would want to do that kind of thing, but. It's certainly in the realm of possibility. Always in the realm of possibility.
It's always an option.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So again, you touched on this perhaps earlier, but more specifically, is there a textural tradition? I mean, is there, if I come to Unity, are there Unity books or readings or other?
Yeah, there are some. There are some Unity writers who really stand out for us. One of them was a homeopathic physician, Emily Cady, who taught in the early 1920s and 30s. She was a homeopathic physician, quite unusual at that time, actually, and wrote a book called Lessons in Truth, mm-hmm. which is sort of a foundational reading for Unity. And we, you know, in our, I guess the Fillmores would consider our primary text the Bible, but the Bible as taught and looked at metaphysically.
Okay. And would that include both the Old and New Testament, or is it more slanted toward the teachings of Jesus?
No, it would be both.
Both, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. In so many other traditions in this country, certainly there has to be a sort of a creed or you know, a statement of faith. And is that or sort of a belief in God a prerequisite?
Not a prerequisite. I think we have a point of view. You know, there's some other denominations that are inclusive, but that perhaps don't have a point of view about that. And Unity does have a point of view. And we have a foundational statement that says that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, God the good, omnipotent. So the point of view is that God exists. And
However defined.
So it doesn't matter how you define it to us.
But I don't have to defend that to you.
Yeah. So... yeah, and that is the point of view, and that's something that we say in, you know, in our services every Sunday, but you don't have to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you don't actually have to say it. If you don't believe it, you don't have to sit there and say it.
Okay, you know, you can stay silent.
Yeah, but there's definitely a point of view.
Yeah, and is music part of the weekly
huge
service?
Yeah, huge is part. We have a great music program, and it's a huge part of it because there's a, you know, someone said that music is praying twice. So
I like that.
So the you know, the Sunday celebration is just our intention. I don't know if we succeed or not. I hope we do, but our intention is that people find a way to connect with the God of their understanding or higher power of their understanding. That's our goal. We want people to feel uplifted, inspired, motivated. We want them to be able to connect with something that within themselves that is good and true and high, and then leave with that to propel them through the week and to, you know, have questions and that they can dig deep into and find answers for themselves. That's our kind of our idea.
And the music would be traditional hymns from whatever tradition or more, I mean, how would you...
Yeah, we've moved away from traditional hymns. We do have Unity has a hymn book.
Oh.
But we've moved away from it. There's a body of music. It's a genre which we call New Thought music.
Okay.
And there are a lot of... musicians, some from the Unity tradition, some not. In fact, in a couple of weeks, we'll be going to a conference of all of these different musicians and learning about their new music.
Their music.
And most of their music is very positive, very uplifting, and just kind of feel good music. So it's kind of, I would call it contemporary, the new age contemporary. It's not new age, but it's contemporary music.
But with sort of some spiritual...
Yeah, all spiritual, very spiritual.
Flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. If you just joined us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am your host here every Saturday morning, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back, and we'll have a check of the weather and continue our discussion with Reverend Don.
You're listening to The Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. The Mind and Heart Show is heard every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The number in the studio is 434-817-9470.
And we're back on The Mind and Heart Show. I want to remind you, coming up at the top of the hour... is Straight Talk with Andra Hakes, a local attorney. And I'm not sure who Andra's guest is today, but she always has a lively discussion. So stay tuned for Straight Talk at the top of the hour. A quick check of the weather. Still holding at 43 degrees this morning in Charlottesville. It's a bit cloudy. We're looking for a high of about 50 today, and I think we had an overnight low of about 31. So plan accordingly. Remember, Monday is a federal holiday. It's Martin Luther King Day. We have this strange compromise in Virginia where we celebrate Lee Jackson Day on Friday and Martin Luther King on Monday, which has always struck me as a very peculiar arrangement. I guess we still have to give time and equal time to those heroes of the Confederacy, despite the meaning of that. But Monday is a federal holiday, so again, plan accordingly. Maybe you'll get a 3-day weekend or a 4-day weekend. So my guest this morning, I'm very pleased to have with me here in the studio, Reverend Don Lansky, who is a co-pastor at Unity Charlottesville. In the coming weeks, I hope to have the other co-pastor from Unity, Reverend Patricia Lansky, and she's written recently published a book, which we'll talk about. I think the subject of with is sort of making peace with death. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's called Accepting Death, Embracing Life, How Death Teaches Us to Live, is what her theme is.
Boy, I'm really looking forward to having Patricia on. You know, we talk a lot about reminding ourselves of that in our tradition and how that can really enrich one's day-to-day life, because you don't want to be on autopilot because you don't know when your time is up. So
right,
I'm guessing that's some of what Patricia has explored in the
it
book.
Is, yeah,
that's very exciting.
And through a lot of personal experience, a lot of personal loss that she's
in her family. Yeah. So what about sort of, again, thinking of more traditional Christianity and notions of afterlife? Is there some sense of that, or again, is it pretty much whatever you want it to be in Unity?
Well, again, it's not. If there's not a dogma about it, the Fillmores and actually most of the founders of these different New Thought traditions around the latter part of the 1800s believed in reincarnation. They believed that the soul is eternal, and that if we in the Fillmore's case, the idea of this Christ potential or Christ consciousness as a sort of a goal of the soul to achieve, their idea was very, very similar to Buddhists and Hindus around the world, that if we don't make it in this lifetime, you will get another body and you'll continue on this journey of the soul.
The idea being that there'd be some progression, though, through these various cycles, as they talk about in the East.
Yeah, very similar, and they were students of the East as well. The Fillmores were. They studied a lot of different things. So, I think that's kind of how that came. And in fact, it's very interesting. In the first alliance of these different New Thought streams was in 1893, the International New Thought Alliance. They formed this group. And one of their first speakers at their meeting in Chicago, where there were thousands of people, was Swami Vivekananda, who was the very first yogi from the East to come over and teach.
I know of him.
So it was a very big kind of deal. So that there is that thought stream. We don't ask anyone to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So people can be in Unity and not believe that. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, you know, it makes one wonder what was going on socio-culturally, economically in that period in history, not too long after the Civil War, that really was fertile ground for all of these movements with, you know, sort of out of dogma and into more of an open thinking belief system.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I don't know the answer to it. I just, you know, it's kind of a phenomenon. I imagine historians would look back on the 60s and the Beatles like that, just so they kind of tapped into this kind of cultural vibe and this energy that was coming in, and it just changed everything.
Yeah, absolutely remarkable. I'd love to know more. Oh, sorry. Sorry, folks. I just almost fell out of my chair. Know more about
the... It's an exciting thought.
Yeah. Exactly. I got so excited about that. Can you talk generally a little bit, Forrest, on about sort of the values, values in terms of how one lives one's life, and you know what values in terms of Unity, or again, is it pretty much an individual?
Well, I think it is individual. I think it's interesting for me. I think the Unity movement in general has been more contemplative and indrawn. So people are asking, does Unity do social outreach? And we do, within the last 10 years or so, as a movement, are more interested in what we call social environmental justice and all that stuff. But but outreach in general is something that is left to the individual. I know that people in our center individually are doing lots of different things in the community.
Okay.
But organizing is not our primary function. Our function is for people to look into their own consciousness and see what is theirs to do.
Okay.
So But to answer your question about values, I think generally I'm really amazed as I study the different faith traditions and spiritual traditions about the commonality of theme, for example, in things like the Golden Rule. You know, that's just everywhere. Every tradition has that kind
of
sense. And that sense of, you know what the right thing to do is. You know, you don't always do it.
Right.
But deep inside of you, you know what's right. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of generally the main value. And
yeah.
Jesus, and you know, people like Jesus, masters like Jesus and Buddha, you know, Jesus said, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And I think I've not heard often
turn the other cheek.
That there's actually not two things there, but three. You know, you love God, you love your neighbor, but you also have to love yourself.
Yes.
And I don't often hear a focus on that.
Yeah. I'm just thinking as you're talking about certain foundational ethical principles, or we talk about the precepts. You know, don't steal, don't lie,
mm-hmm.
don't cheat on your partner, don't have irresponsible sex, don't use intoxicants, mm-hmm. don't kill. Again, those I think show up in so many traditions. I mean, those were the basic lay principles that the Buddha taught. Mm-hmm. But I think again, they would be ethical principles that most traditions would embrace.
Sure.
It always seems ironic to me that some of the more fundamentalist denominations behave in ways that seem so contrary to those fundamental ethics and values
yeah.
that to me are universal.
It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I know for me personally, that is a growing edge, is how to not be intolerant of intolerance.
Yeah.
You know.
Likewise,
yeah.
I mean, I have extended family that come out of that, and I always want to say to them, how do you reconcile your hatred of gays mm-hmm. with the teachings of Christianity,
yeah.
as you see it? It's just, I mean, I can't imagine the kind of mental gymnastics or compartmentalization that you'd have to do to make that work.
Yeah, and I can't either.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people who are attracted to, you know, to Buddhism, people who are attracted to unity. I think that's the kind of dilemma that we have with our formal training.
Yes.
You know, it just doesn't coexist well, and so you have to find your answers of what is the truth, right?
Yeah, Pat Coffey is our senior teacher in our community, and he always says that, you know, ethics are foundational. If they're not there, you can't expect to make any progress mm-hmm. on the path, because
yeah.
you're living a lie, you're having to deny parts of yourself, you're having to behave in ways that will make it impossible to reach a more enlightened state mm-hmm. of being.
Yeah,
and he just says that again and again. I think it's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love what Rabbi Hillel said. Rabbi Hillel was a contemporary of Jesus, and was told to explain the Torah while standing on one foot, and he basically said, "Don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you."
Mm-hmm.
On that, the
there
whole Torah rests, and he said everything else is commentary. So
absolutely. And again, thinking about certain values of compassion and kindness and honesty And you know, what's become an important part of certainly Buddhism in the West is this notion of self-compassion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story about the Dalai Lama's here, and some student stands up and says, "Your Holiness, what do I do about my self-hatred?" And it's almost as though he didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the notion that kind of self-reproach and self-hatred really grows out of this rugged individualism of the West.
Mm-hmm.
And more in cultures in the East, where there's a sense of the greater good, they don't struggle with those same kinds of questions. So we've started to emphasize a lot self-compassion
mm-hmm.
Before you can make some progress on
yeah.
your path.
Yeah.
Did you run into that as well?
Absolutely, sure.
I think
that was, for me personally, was my impetus for ministry. Because I found that even after years and years of meditation, and I've been meditating over 45 years actually.
Wow.
There were still things that I was dealing with that had to do with self-worth and all of that. That was an impetus for me to go into ministry, because that's what I was noticing. I was noticing that people, regardless of their traditions and regardless of their years of meditation, that idea of really loving and accepting who you are was just for a lot of people just missing.
Very powerful.
Yeah.
And I think if we're honest, you know, we all, I see this all the time when I teach, how universal that is, at least in our culture, in the Western culture. And on retreats, how much that comes up in interviews in terms of people struggling with this tremendous self-judgment and and lack of self-compassion. And it's quite, it's been painful in my own life, as you say, in yours, but also it's always painful to encounter it in others, because you see the fundamental goodness in people and you just want to shake them and say, what's the problem here?
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? And I don't really notice. I mean, it's obvious, and people have had difficult childhoods, but some people had great loving childhoods and still have that sense that you know, I'm not good enough, or I'm not enough, or whatever.
And you know, I really think we're such an achievement based culture, and the bar, you know, it's the old thing, Groucho Marx, I wouldn't want to belong to a club that would have me as a member. That once people meet, you know, achieve a certain level, well, if I'm here, it must not be so great. I got to get to the next level. I mean, I know that's been true in my own life in the past. You know, I just have to keep up in the ante. Mm-hmm. And I think we're such an achievement, individually, focus on individual achievement in the culture, that unless you can get unhooked from that, you're going to suffer with self-judgment and self-loathing.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's what the beauty and the wisdom of these different spiritual traditions that emphasize meditation, you know. I know in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a passage that, you know, when Arjuna is asking how to live, and the Lord says, established in being, perform action. So first you have to get to that space, that inner space of oneness, of quietude, of expansion, and then from there you come out and you act.
Yeah. And what we teach in terms of mindfulness is mindfulness of those thoughts which are self-condemning or self-loathing, and then to challenge them, you know, because if you're not aware of them, you know, a lot of times they're fairly automatic and well-conditioned. But once you become more mindful of them, then you have an opportunity to counter them or respond to them with self-compassion, like, you know, golly, I'm struggling.
So do you have a sense that in being more mindful and just kind of recognizing that somehow the power of that negative thought diminishes?
Absolutely, and that's been so true, because now I can just, you know, I like to say to students, you know, when that, you need to recognize when it comes up and then learn to take a half a step back. Mm-hmm. That once you can create some spaciousness around it, it tends to sort of dissolve.
Yeah, yeah.
So it comes up and you see it and say, no, I'm not going to go there.
Right.
You know, the Rumi poem about the house guests, welcome them all in, give them tea. You don't have to like them, and you don't even have to give them credibility. But if you're pushing them away, they're going to get more stronger and stronger.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you welcome them, but then you let go of them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, I'm not going to listen to you today.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Brilliant.
We've just got a couple minutes, and I wanted just to ask you if you could share with us a little bit about how your faith informs your daily life, both personally and as a pastor at Unity.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely essential. It's key. And, you know, just in the line of talking about mindfulness, it's really a continual process, isn't it? It's being aware of some negative thought or negative experience and being conscious of it, and then really asking what is the truth in this situation. So so I believe in this idea of connection, and I actually, my day is informed by my meditation practice, which is 2 hours a day. I meditate an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening. And then throughout the day I struggle with monkey mind like everybody, you know, just to see how the mind is working, to say thank you for sharing. That's not the truth, and that's not where I choose to go right now. So
wonderful.
And I think also I'm absolutely motivated, being a minister with a congregation, absolutely totally awed by the courage that I see that people have in dealing with their issues and moving through their lives and dealing with the different challenges. I'm just awed by the courage of our people.
Yeah, boy, amen to that, because both in my career as a psychologist and then and also in terms of teaching in our tradition, you can't not be touched by the courage of people to go to places and deal with some of the horrific experiences. And it's the human spirit is a powerful thing, and
it
I'm
sure
never
is.
Not moved by it when people bring it in.
Mm.
You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, your host. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10. And we've had a really far-reaching and fascinating discussion this morning with our guest, Reverend Don Lansky, who is the co-pastor at Unity Charlottesville. And before we close, I'm just going to ask Don to tell us a little bit more about how people can learn more about Unity, how they can contact Unity, how they might gain information if they're interested in Unity as an option in their life. So, Don, can you tell us how our listeners could get in touch?
Sure. Yeah, we have a website, unitycville.org. We're on Facebook, Unity Charlottesville. And our phone number is 434-978-1062. And so if you'd like more information, you can go to the website, and you can also get on a mailing list. We produce a weekly mailing list that just says all the different activities and the different partnerships that we have with different groups. Today we have the Edgar Casey Group, the Association for Research and Enlightenment. We have a speaker there. So next week we're having someone for the Essential Light Institute talking about energy and so different things.
Yeah, and I've visited this facility, and I have to just say that it's absolutely a beautiful space. It's such a welcoming space, and it's just a wonderful place to go and get quiet. And if you have an opportunity just to stop by and ask for a quick tour, it's really quite a remarkable facility there. So I want to give a little plug to Don on that.
Can I also say our Sunday celebration services are 10:30 every Sunday.
Okay. Thank you. So I really want to thank Don for coming in this morning. It's been really informative and interesting. If you joined us late, please go to cvillepodcast.com on Monday and enter Mind Heart into the search box, and this interview and prior interviews and shows will come up, and you can replay this at your leisure. We'll be back next week. Look on our Facebook page early in the week for an announcement about our guest next week. We're still working on that, and we will be back. Stay tuned now at the top of the hour for Straight Talk with Andra Hakes, and have a great week, and we'll see you next Saturday.